Good evening. Welcome, everybody. A lot of you were here last week when Robbie taught the first class of Tantra for us, Introduction to Tantra. And the next three classes will be taught by Dawn. And then right after that, as many of you know, we are going to have a celebration of all the work we've done in this Discovering Buddhism cycle, all 13 modules, any part of the 13 modules that you've done, please come celebrate with other Discovering Buddhism students, and then we'll start over again in January with a new cycle of Discovering Buddhism. In November and December, we will not have classes, but we will have a discussion group. So I hope that a lot of you are able to come to that, and we can discuss topics that are related to these Discovering Buddhism topics amongst ourselves.
Lama Zopa is a great story. Lama Zopa is our spiritual director. He was given a talk in Hong Kong. This is many years ago. And this guy, Peter Kedge, who used to be a monk, was involved in some sort of trade business in Hong Kong. Anyway, so he invited Lama Zopa, and hundreds of people showed up to the Lama Zopa's teachings. And because they promoted it and everything, and Lama Zopa started teaching, and he taught, and he kept teaching. Has anybody been to Lama Zopa's marathon teachings? Yeah, so he kept going, and this went on for hours and hours. We got into the wee hours of the morning, and when Lama Zopa stopped teaching, he'd kind of been in a trance, and he looked up, and everybody was gone except the sponsors, and he just laughed. He thought it was so funny, but, you know. So you have to pay the, you know. It was a good example of, look, we're not here to Buddhism's, you know. Gaudama, we're not an entertainment center. You know, Ravi's pretty entertaining, but this is not about entertainment. This is really about educating ourselves on how to stop our suffering and find happiness. It's real simple. And then helping others. Three things. And that's the bottom line of what Gaudama Center is about. And so Lama Yeshe said, when he created the LPMT, he said, we're an educational organization, but part of that is practice. So we're going to do, you know, I'm going to try to emphasize, my job here, Erin's told me, she's my boss, so I have to present the part of it that has to do with the esoteric part of it. But I'd like to also give us some opportunity to do some practices, so you get a taste of Tantra, and so... we're going to start out just by doing relaxing your... we're going to do the foundation of all good qualities. Now, how many people have been doing Discovering Buddhism all along and have been here 100% of the time? Are going to finish this module out? Raise your hand up. Okay, good. All right. So, how many people are new? First time here? First time tonight? Yeah, here. All right, but have a first time in Discovering Buddhism. All right. And first time, like, ever with Tibetan Buddhism. Anybody? Everybody understand a little bit about Tantra? Do you have any idea what this subject is about? Anybody know anything about Tantra?
We know.
That's why you're here, right? Okay. Well, I do, but I don't know that much. But that's why I'm here. But I have done quite a few tantric retreats. The longest was almost 3 months, and I think it's unbelievable. It's so great, and I kicked my butt. It was the hardest thing I've ever done, but it was also the most profound thing I've ever done in terms of looking at my mind and seeing what a mess it is. But that's not a bad thing, because then we also, we're recognizing that which we can trans, we can like get beyond the delusions and the negativities. And but you can, you know, Tantra is a very powerful method to transform the mind. But there, as we'll learn in the video and in other things we do in the class, that there's a definite price to be paid to get the results that we want. And we have to be prepared. We have to be a suitable vessel, you might say, to be able to hear these teachings and benefit from them. And if we haven't, it's not for everybody. So those of you who are here, who, there may be one person here, which is fine, or none, who really sincerely want to practice Tantra at, even at a beginner's level. And since, if you're here just to complete discovering Buddhism, that's okay. That's just fine too. Or if you're just curious, that's fine as well. So, I do, anything I know about Tantra, I give full credit to my gurus, my teachers. That word comes up a lot in Tantra, is that you talk about these teachers that you have unshakable faith and confidence that they are the real deal. You know, that they have worked on themselves and transformed their minds and their delusions and have cultivated the positive qualities that we all want to develop. And we basically train ourselves to see these beings, our gurus, the gurus for whatever practice we're doing. And you could have many gurus. I'm not a guru, by the way. I'm not qualified to be a guru. I'm only qualified I'm not even qualified to teach this class. But at least at the moment, I'm the most qualified at Kadampa Center. So maybe that'll change. What did you say?
The least unqualified.
Thank you, Robbie. That's very well said. So anyway, let's start out with a little meditation. So sit up straight with your back, you know, just sit up comfortably straight. And and notice your body. Pay attention to how your body is posturing. You want to be comfortable. Usually if you're in a chair, you think of leaning back, but maybe not so. For meditation, you want to be sitting upright, like your vertebrae are like coins stacked one on top of the other. And then bring your awareness to the body and be aware of the body sitting. And then bring your awareness it is working, right? Ella? Yeah. Bring your awareness to your breath and the experience of breathing. And when your mind wanders, which it will do, inevitably, usually within 5 seconds of trying to focus on your breath, the practice here, the reps that we're doing for our biceps, you might say, to build up the muscle called mindfulness and concentration, is every time you see your mind taking off, usually it's chasing an object of desire, something that we find attractive, but not always. Sometimes it's the negative desire, the mind of aversion that takes the mind, or it's boredom, or it's a lot of things can happen. But whenever you see that your mind is taken off, you bring it back. That's the practice, is bringing the mind back. Once, twice, hundreds, thousands of times, whatever you need to do to discipline the mind. Something that we have never, ever been told is important, is like the most important thing of all, is to be mindful and to have a disciplined mind. In a moment, we're going to read the Foundation of All Good Qualities, which is a fairly succinct Lam Rim text. Okay, so those of you who are brand new, I'll say this much: it's the essence of the whole Buddhist path. And if you don't understand the meaning of the stanzas, you can read about it and study about it and understand the essence of the path, which, as Robbie alluded to last week, the only way that you can get any benefit from Tantra, in other words, do you want to be Luke Skywalker or Darth Vader? If you want to be Darth Vader, you do it for selfish reasons. You don't have this altruistic intention to become enlightened as your motivation. But you must, to really get benefit from Tantra, you have to have a compassionate motivation that we call bodhicitta. And that has to be conjoined not only with this idea of renunciation, but also this idea of an understanding of emptiness. So the key, though, is compassion. The key is altruism for the practice of Tantra. The ideal tantric practitioner is someone called a bodhisattva. Is someone who cannot, who's aware of their own suffering, aware of the suffering of other living beings, and is so tuned in and connect and feel so connected to others that literally finds others' suffering unbearable. Not in a paralyzing way, but just, it's just so sad. And the bodhisattva wants to become enlightened, that is, purify their obscurations and develop their good qualities. They want to do it as quickly as possible. They don't want to wait three countless eons, which is how long it takes to get enlightened on the sutra path. They want to get on a jet instead of a rowboat. They want to get on a jet and get enlightened on the quickest vehicle possible, which is the tantric vehicle. Again, it's fast, it's powerful, and it takes a really skilled practitioner with great commitment and great confidence in the power of Tantra and in their guru. That person can then benefit from Tantra. The rest of us, we can aspire to have those, to be that kind of practitioner. Maybe we won't do it in this lifetime, but we can at least aspire to practice at that level. So we'll do the Foundation of All Good Qualities together. The Foundation of All Good Qualities is the kind and perfect pure guru. Correct devotion to him is the root of the path. By clearly seeing this and applying great effort, please bless me to rely upon him with great respect. understanding that the precious freedom of this rebirth is found only once, is greatly meaningful, and is difficult to find again. Please bless me to generate the mind that unceasingly, day and night, takes its essence. This life is as impermanent as a water bubble. Remember how quickly it decays and death comes.
After death, just like a
shadow follows the body, the results of black and white karma follow. Finding firm and definite conviction in this, please bless me always to be careful, to abandon even the slightest negativities, and accomplish all virtuous deeds. Seeking samsaric pleasures is the door to all suffering. They are uncertain and cannot be relied upon. Recognizing these shortcomings, please bless me to generate the strong wish for the bliss of liberation. Let God as pure thought, mindfulness, alertness, and great caution arise. The root of the teachings is keeping the Padimoksha vows. Please bless me to accomplish this essential practice. Just as I have fallen into the sea of samsara, so have all mother migratory beings. Please bless me to see this, train the supreme bodhicitta, and bear the responsibility of freeing migratory beings. Even after I develop only bodhicitta, but I practice the three types of morality, I will not achieve enlightenment. With my clear recognition of this, please bless me to practice the bodhisattva vows with great energy. Once I have pacified distractions from wrong objects and correctly analyzed the meaning of reality, please bless me to generate quickly within my mind stream a unified path of common body and special insight. Having become a pure vessel by training in the general path, please bless me to enter the holy gateway of the fortunate ones, the supreme Vajra vehicle. Wait a minute. What is the supreme Vajra vehicle?
Tantra.
Okay, go ahead. At that time, the basis of accomplishing the two attainments is keeping pure vows and samaya. As I have become firmly convinced of this, please bless me to protect these vows and pledges like my life. Then, having realized the importance of the two stages, the essence of the Vajrayana, by practicing with great energy, never giving up the four sessions, please bless me to realize the teachings of the Holy Guru. Like that, may the Gurus who show the noble path and the spiritual friends who practice it have long lives. Please bless me to pacify completely all outer and inner hindrances, and all my lives, never separated from perfect Gurus, may I enjoy the magnificent Dharma. By completing the qualities of the stages and paths, may I quickly attain the state of Vajradhara. Okay. So, we're going to watch a video.
Yay.
Yeah. Yay is right. We don't have to. And the video actually covers almost all the important points of the teaching. So, I may want to stop the video and write some things on the board at certain points.
I'm going to drag the video up here so you can tell me.
What is that?
It's the video.
Oh, I'm going to tell you to. Okay.
We'll be right here.
All right. So we may not even get through the whole video tonight, but this is a video that was done about, 15 years ago. And it's an introduction to Tantra video. At the end of the video, John Landau, who wrote the book, who actually compiled the book Introduction to Tantra, which is the text for this course, he gets interviewed. And he was here last year, I believe, yeah.
Can I mention for anyone streaming online, in the comments of the online streaming on YouTube, it will have the link to this video. So if you want to listen more directly to this video, it's there. Or if you want to go back and review it afterwards, because it might be hard to stream this to the screen, if that makes sense.
All right, are we starting?
Yeah, go ahead.
Teachings of the Buddha are vast in scope and profound in implications. one of the most profound are his teachings on Tantra, also called Vajrayana, based on the foundation of loving kindness, a correct view of reality, and
association.
You're tired of life, as you know it, and you're courageously determined to be free of samsara for the sake of all beings. If that's the case, then the practice of Tantra is for you. Under the guidance of qualified masters, students learn methods such as visualization, deity yoga meditation, and mantra recitation that help transform diluted energy into wisdom, so we can see the totality of who and what we really are. As Buddhist practitioners, it's essential to realize that the highly sophisticated and sensitive techniques of Tantra simply won't work, and even can be highly dangerous unless our motivation is genuinely altruistic. Since these precious teachings are extremely difficult to come across in this day and age, join us in investigating how we can make the most of this extremely rare opportunity.
In this presentation, you're going to hear about the Buddha's most esoteric teachings, those of Tantra. You've also heard that an altruistic motivation is especially important in the case of these teachings. In fact, it's very much like in the fairy tales you may have heard as a child. You know, it's only the most pure-hearted hero who's actually able to free the princess and save the day. And in the same way, it's only the most sincere, altruistic-minded practitioner who is able to succeed in the practice of Tantra. Now, the Buddha says that the fundamental nature of our hearts and minds is purity. We simply have to discover that purity through the veils of our ignorance. And so before listening to these teachings, take just a moment to discover the purity of your own heart, and to generate a very strong and determined intention to attain the state of a Buddha through the practice of Tantra in order to be able to bring to enlightenment all other living beings.
To understand and to encourage that the entire my problem, I can deal with my problem, I can solve the my problem. That attitude, I think, is very essential for the growth of oneself. I truly believe that all of us, you know, even though we are not good meditators, you know, we are not maybe good spiritual, you know, but all of us, if we have some understanding and we have encouragement oneself, we can solve the problem. Most times we lack of, you know, understanding of our own capacity. We put ourselves down. That's why Tibetan Buddhism, sometimes you see Buddha with you. You see yourself as Buddha. I'm sure you all of you will that kind of thing.
This guy's been here before too. Must be a long time ago. Venerable Neil.
Many qualities. Even at our level, we can see qualities.
what we should try to understand is that that's just a little hint of the actual qualities of a truly realized being.
So, for action and performance tantra, First of all, the first levels of vows that are assumed by those who are lay people are vows of individual liberation, and these are in the form of the vows of refuge. So these include abandoning the 10 non-virtuous actions. Then on top of that, the vows which are assumed are bodhisattva vows. In the case of action and performance tantra, we are not receiving tantric vows. In the case of yoga and highest yoga tantra, on top of refuge and on top of bodhisattva vows, we also assume the tantric vows. Together with the tantric vows, we assume the commitment of engaging in six sessions of yoga. Now, as the name indicates, there are six sessions of that. It's a practice that is repeated.
Oh.
Sorry about that. The plug just came out.
Why is the plug coming out? Make it blue sound.
What happened?
I don't know. It's just... Oh, it's just coming out for a moment. The sound comes in. Oh, it fails. Unplug and then plug it up. And I apologize for the bad, some of the bad happening, but because our speaker's not great, I think it's a little bit better than not having it at all.
Is that voice recognition trying to do that? Is that what Jill was talking to us about? She's, bless her heart.
What we are doing is we are generating ourselves as a deity, visualizing the deity with all its aspects during the day, every day.
We did 6 times, right?
If one is practicing lower tantra, one would have to engage on top of bodhisattva vows. We also assume the tantric vows. Together with tantric vows, we assume the commitment of engaging in 6 sessions of guru yoga. Now, as the name indicates, there are 6 sessions of that. It's a practice that is repeated 6 times during the day, every day. If one is practicing lower tantras, one would have to engage in 2 distinct stages, which are called yoga with signs and yoga without signs. Within the frame of the practices with signs, what we are doing is we are generating ourselves as the deity, visualizing the deity with all its aspects. Then at the next phase, when we are practicing yoga without signs, we are meditating on the emptiness of all these appearances. What happens with the highest yoga tantra is that we are engaging in practices of generation stage and practices of completion stage. Again, there are 2 distinct phases, more or less similar practices, but they are given different names. At the stage of generation, again, we are visualizing ourselves as the deity, but at the stage of completion, we are focusing on practices that will be bringing about the purification of the channels, the winds and the drops. The reason why we do that is because we want to render the 3 things serviceable. We want to bring about a certain degree of purification and flexibility with the winds and the drops that move within our channels. And the reason for that is that in that way we can actually bring about a general purification of all other aspects of our body, not only improving the health, but also getting closer to this model of perfect existence of the Buddha that we have as a goal. So what we are trying to do in the practice of completion stage is to purify the channels and the winds that flow through them. If we can render those things serviceable, then what we will do is actually, ideally, purify the winds that move through the channels. And if you can change the movement of the winds, that means that you can also change the type of mind that is riding those winds. This is what we are referring to when we use the term completion. We are referring to complete purification and complete serviceability of the winds and the channels. Now, it is important to understand that most of the channels that we have within our own body are not stretched out as they should be. Most of the channels are twisted. Many of them may have knots in them, which means that channels which are restricted like that do not allow a flow of the winds and the substances through them. So it's important to exercise. In the same way that some people like very much to do physical exercise because they know the benefit of those exercises. If you can understand that on a physical level, then take that at the level of completion stage and understand that what you are doing during your daily yoga is to engage in some sort of exercises that will bring about this pliancy of the channels and the winds and the substances. Now, when we talk about tantra, also we use the word mantra, and many times we also talk about secret mantra. Mantra and tantra are used almost as an equivalent. If we look at the etymology of the word mantra, it can be broken down into two words. It means mind protection. And when we talk about those practices, we talk about protection, and it's not only the body and speech that need to be protected. The mind is the one that primarily needs to be protected. If the mind is protected, then the body and speech will automatically, secondarily in a sense, will also be covered by this protection. And what is it that the mind needs to be protected from? Well, it is the sense that we have an ordinary body, an ordinary speech, an ordinary mind. We need to protect ourselves from thinking that we are ordinary. We need to protect ourselves from ordinary appearances and the sensing at those appearances. So this is the protection that we are seeking for through these practices. And finally, we come to the explanation of the last word, secret. When we talk about the mantra or tantra, we mean the secret vehicle. It's called the secret vehicle because those practices need to remain undisclosed. Undisclosed to those who are not suitable to hear about those things. It is said that if you talk about your tantric practices to those who are not ready or are not suitable, they have not been prepared to hear about those things, most probably these people will generate reverse faith, non-faith in those practices, and this is what we are trying to avoid in this situation. As beginners, it makes more sense that we will spend more time on practices of sutra rather than practices of tantra. But that doesn't mean that we will completely abandon tantric practices. It is important to understand that sutra on its own cannot take you very far. And tantra that is not supported by sutra will not end with the right result. So it's important to always unite sutra and tantra and make sure that one complements the other.
extraordinary ego dominated by the fact that they're behind is just totally unsatisfying. Even when things look beautiful, look pleasant, they may just be not just be a disguised form of dissatisfaction. I don't think the reality of that would have hit me if, at the same time, I wasn't doing other practices which were attempting to purify my vision, concentrate my attention, remove some major obstacles so that I could understand things deeper. So later, when I was working on Mom Bush's teachings and introduction, discusses this to some extent. Helps you actually understand the sutra topic better. I really felt I understood it.
Thank you. So, any comments about that or questions before? Yeah.
The comment is I'm trying to put in kind of framework or context the Tantra teachings. I found very similar proposal with the Kundalini rising in the Hinduism.
In the what?
Sorry?
The Kundalini rising.
Rising in the Hinduism.
In Hinduism.
Right. Okay. So connected with this are the conceptual understanding of the body.
Mm-hmm.
For the chakras,
mm-hmm.
and the channels,
mm-hmm.
and how the energy of Kundalini is rising, going chakra, 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 chakra. No? So this expansion of the energy of the body and the subtle body that is information in this context. No, and then how, if you expand, negativity is very dangerous. If you expand, positivity is good. So that the reason for the good foundation, for the rising of all this energy. But the thing that I'm seeing here is another level of information on how you understand the body that we have.
Right. Now we're talking about completion stage practices. That is so far beyond where we are, you know, right now.
Okay.
We're just trying to, we're like babies. You know, it's like walking into a advanced physics class, you know, and we don't even know how to read. We got work to do. We have a lot of foundation to lay before we can start working with the channels and the winds and the drops and purifying the mind through energy instead of, most of the time we're slugging it out with conceptual mind. But in Tantra, completion stage practices, that's when you work with the energy. But let's talk about what it takes to get there. That's the first step. Okay? Anything? I saw another hand. No. Okay. So, do you mind coming forward if you're sitting in the back? Could you join us?
Sure.
Yeah, I appreciate it. It's helpful. I made some notes of things that were said during the teachings, because this is like the whole class. I mean, this is most of the didactic stuff we're going to cover in this class. So, but I wanted to just touch on a few of these things. Then let's do some practice. I think that would be helpful. I've got a little practice that I think give people a taste of what Lama Yeshe was talking about. By the way, I went to a class. One time I was in Washington, D.C. I'm not going to tell you who was teaching this class, but anyway, it's another Tibetan Buddhist group. And they titled, instead of, what do they call it, Introduction to Tantra, this class? So boring. So boring. Wisdom, Desire, and Bliss. An Introduction to Tantra. Now that will get people here. You know, Introduction to Tantra, what does that mean? I like that. Well, here's what else he said, and this is also true, though. Practical talks and guided meditations, introducing Buddha's special methods of liberating the imagination and achieving our highest potentials. So this is one of the powerful things about Tantra that's, I've got my little how to meditate app on my phone and my little mindfulness practices, and I know how to meditate on the bodhicitta and how to do that sort of stuff. You know, it's very guided, what we call, very conceptual, analytical meditations. And most of us who've been here for a while know how to do this, but Tantra is like, using your imagination in a way that we've never ever imagined you could use it. And actually beginning to see yourself, you remember Lama Yeshe in the beginning, he was talking about how we see ourselves as so limited. We see ourselves, it's a self-fulfilling prophecy, by the way. I'm limited. And we have like scripts, novels that we've written about ourselves, and they're not usually with a happy ending. Well, not all, but there's a lot of it. It's just we have certain things that we believe we're hardwired this way. We have, I'm limited this way. And also because I'm a man, I'm a woman, I'm smart, I'm not smart, I'm handsome, I'm old, I'm young, and all the stuff that goes around that we have so many hardwired beliefs about ourselves, and many of them are limiting beliefs. And so in Tantra, this is why we really have to understand emptiness well. You know what I mean by emptiness? Those of you who are new here, but emptiness, what's in the view of emptiness, simply said, we project on, let's use ourselves as an example, we have a view of ourselves, and it's just conceptual, isn't it? It's just words that pop up. But we believe those words. We not only believe them, but we believe in our heart of hearts that this is exactly who I am and how I am, and we believe that it's truly existed. I am that way, or I am not that way. So until we can see that is not the truth, we're empty or void of those fantasized ways of existing. There's ways that we think that we are that are literally fantasized, created by our mind, that we so strongly hold on to that limit us. We have to be able to let go of that. That's why emptiness, understanding emptiness, is crucial. And we want to talk about the big difference between Hindu Tantra, because Hindu has Tantra too, and it talks about, you can even find certain, I think it's even in some of the in the yogic traditions or yoga, I'm not exactly sure about that, but I know they do work with energies and so forth in yoga. But the biggest difference between Hindu Tantra and Tibetan or Vajrayana Tantra, which is the Buddhist teachings, is the motivation is compassion, absolutely pure compassion. I have to get enlightened in order to help others as quickly as I can. So it's really coming from the heart. And then there's the understanding of emptiness. Hinduism doesn't have that. And we have to let go. You know, if we're operating from the perspective that we're this polluted person with limitations and so forth, and then we can imagine ourselves as a Buddha figure, as a Buddha, as a deity, you know, it's like putting on a wetsuit. It's not really, we're not really transforming ourselves into a deity. We're just, you know, putting on the clothing or we're using our imagination, but underneath that we still feel very like unworthy, not good enough. No, I could never achieve enlightenment. I could never, I'm limited in what I can do. Whereas in Buddhism, you know, Lama Yeshe's talking about Buddha nature. This is a very crucial part of, and Tantra comes from this. So it's not just a fantasy. This is, and it's also something that we can experience ourselves. Our basic nature, when underneath all the garbage, is pure. And once we begin to meditate and begin to see even that little space between thoughts and feelings and stuff where we might have a glimpse of our reality and we can see it, we can actually, it's said that there, you know, an advanced meditator, somebody that's really put time and effort into it, can begin to sense the amazing potential of our mind and our body. What we can do. So we have this Buddha nature is where Tantra is coming from. So in a tantric sadhana, look, by the way, look around you. Oh, this is tantric. Every one of these images. I mean, there's, in the back, there's White Tara. This is a female deity, Buddha figure, tantric deity, and she symbolizes compassion and long life. And she helped, if we wanted to do a practice to extend our lives, we might use that practice of White Tara, and she has a special mantra that goes along with the practice. So each of these deities around here have mantras and their whole practices that have evolved around those deities. So then there's these are the 35 Buddhas, which there are deities there. There's a thousand-armed Shinrezig over here in the left upper left-hand corner, which is the Buddha of compassion. A thousand arms reaching out, you know, in every direction, 11 heads, thousand arms. In the palm of each hand is an all-seeing eye of wisdom, reaching out to help suffering sentient beings. You know, reaching in every direction to help others. So, can you imagine yourself being that? No. You know, being someone who could actually reach out in all directions and effectively stop the suffering of others and also guide them to find some sort of lasting happiness. So, then we have over here, you know, in terms of highest yoga tantra, we have Kala Chakra, which is both the male and female deity. You know, so that's a very advanced level of practice that, you know, we're certainly, at least, I don't know anybody else here, but I'm suspicious that nobody here is ready to practice at that highest level. Again, where you're working with those energies more than you're not working with conceptual mind. What you're trying to do is catch and harness that subtlest level of mind and then meditate on reality with that subtlest level of consciousness. And with that, you can very quickly purify your negativities and very quickly have a direct, non-conceptual view of reality or seeing emptiness directly. So, but that's a very, that's a profound level of practice to be able to do that. So Hashtag Tantra is the only way to get there. It said, now some people, anybody can argue with anything, but it said that the only way to get enlightened, now they say you can get enlightened in three countless eons in the sutra path, but they say really the only way you can get enlightened is through practice of Hashtag Tantra. So in the Tibetan tradition, we stress, there's the four stages of Tantra that were mentioned in here someplace. Yeah, the four classes of Tantra. Well, usually what we do is action Tantra, or there's Kriya, Kriya Charya, Yoga and Hatha Yoga. Anyway, this Kriya is action Tantra. Okay, that's what most of these deities are. White Tara, all these Tara statues back here, they're all of the Kriya Tantra tradition, the lowest level of Tantra. And then there's Performance Tantra, and then there's Yoga Tantra, and then there's Highest Yoga Tantra. Okay? So I think it's Kriya, Charya, Yoga, and Mahanatara Yoga. These are the Sanskrit words. You don't have to remember that. But anyway, but mainly what we practice around here is the Kriya Tantra practices, and then there's a lot of emphasis on at least having the imprints of Hatha Yoga Tantra in our mind stream, with the aspiration that at some time in this life or in a future life, we can practice at that highest level, because that's the way to get enlightened. And so there are four deities that we, at least in the Galupa tradition, that are practiced in the highest Yoga Tantra level. The first one that people are usually told to practice is one called Yamantaka. And then there's another one that we practice is Guhya Samaja. Another one that we practice is Haruka. And then another one is Kala Chakra. Those are kind of the four main highest Yoga Tantra deities. Now, you don't have to remember that either. But if you do the Guru Puja and stuff like that, it's all built around these deity practices that have to do with these four deities. At least three of them. At least the first three that I mentioned. So anyway, there's these different levels of Tantra. So how does Tantra work with the energy of desire? Because everybody likes, most people like to feel good, right? And desire energy is a powerful energy. Wanting and craving and desire is a powerful energy. And we say that we often say, well, there's something, some people think, well, Buddhism is all about shutting yourself off from everything that's attractive, everything that's desirable, and then somehow that's the only way to make any progress. And Lama Yeshe's saying, particularly in the West, he said, this is like the perfect place to practice Tantra, because there's so, the energy of desire, there's so much stuff and attractive people and attractive things and everything to evoke the energy of desire. But then what we need to learn how to do is transform that energy into wisdom. Because if you just go with desire, well, hey, what do you get? We get more of what we already have, which is not working for us, right? Right now, what we crave, we're all addicted to deliciousness, right? So we want pleasure, we want stuff, we want to get stuff, we want a good reputation, we want people to say nice things about us, and we crave not to have, pain and loss and disgrace and blame. So on the one hand, our desires, because they're unbridled and untamed, we are addicted to pleasure, and at the same time, we're addicted to avoiding the opposite of these desirable things, which is pain in some form or another. And so, this isn't working for us. We think, you know, so we have to be able to transform it. And so Tantra uses the methods of deity yoga. And I can't talk a lot about it today, but just basically to say that if we have the foundations of renunciation, which is understanding that, let me look at the time here. Whoops. Understanding that renunciation means what? Those of you who've been here for a while, give me the textbook, the definition of renunciation. Yeah.
Just renunciating the endless samsara cycle.
Yeah, renouncing it. But it's another way of saying it is that it's the Alex Berzin, Alex says, it's like the determination to be free. Free of what? This endless cycle of suffering that we call samsara. What were you going to say?
I like the Lama Yeshe in the book, Definite Emergence.
Yeah. Yeah, so we're...
Two words.
Yeah, emerging from the cycle of suffering, right? So that's important. Then the second aspect, again, to make Tantra work, we have to have... and by the way, to even believe that we can emerge, what has to be there? Don't you have to have some faith that you can that you can do it? Most of us don't have any faith, and we go, oh well, you know, maybe. But it is really hard to get up in the morning and go to work, and you know, my mind is such a mess, and you know, we don't have a lot of self-confidence. We don't believe that we have Buddha nature, for example, or this ability to achieve these extraordinary levels of compassion and loving kindness and wisdom and skillful means. We just don't think we have it, right? Yeah.
Of all the classes that I've taken here, that's the first time I've actually heard that. Renunciation for the stuff we've been through has always been more of the commitment to it, the vigilance to it, but not the idea of the belief.
Absolutely. Believing in yourself that you can, otherwise why would you, I want to be free of suffering, well if you don't even think it's possible, why would you just make, it's just a joke. So we have to have some faith that it's possible. And it takes some faith. But it's not just blind faith. It's faith based, really, in my own experience, it's faith based on really a couple of things. One is meeting qualified teachers like Lama Yeshe and Lama Zopa for me and His Holiness the Dalai Lama and other teachers that I've met that I think, wow, they've got it. They are extraordinary beings. I would love to have, you know, and I'm seeing a tip of the iceberg, right? So that this is what I'm seeing. So you know, having some faith that I could do that because I can see another human being that's done it. And then, also, we get a glimpse of it when we practice. When you do the practices and you begin to see that your suffering is diminishing, that you don't stay angry for 3 days, you only stay angry for 2.5 days. Or then slowly, 2 days. And then slowly, maybe 5 or 10 years down the road, maybe only an hour. You know? It's slowly, slowly, slowly. It doesn't happen fast. This is not Prozac. That still takes 3 weeks to work, but, you know. All right, Xanax. Well, if we really want to go for it, what is it? Anyway, drugs. In general, you get a quick fix, but it doesn't last. Doesn't last. We're looking for lasting joy, freedom, and happiness. So that's what we want. This determination to be free, based on the confidence that we can be free, and the confidence, at least, I think, comes from having a really qualified teacher slash guru that you've actually experienced, or you have some faith that they are the real deal, and then you practice and you see your mind changing and you go, wow, that's cool. If I can make this much progress, why can't I make that much progress and then that much progress and on just through my conscientious effort to develop my mind. So that's renunciation. And bodhicitta is this based on love and compassion, not sentimentality, but based on genuine sense of love and compassion. And you cannot have compassion. You've got to have compassion for your worst enemy, by the way, for this to work. So it's not it's an unqualified compassion. It's compassion for not only the friends and the infinite numbers of strangers that we see. There are people in boats down off the Neuse River now, and people in Kinston, and people in Morehead City, and we don't know. We see them. We go, oh, it's too bad. I'm glad I'm here and they're there. But we don't really have any real sense of connection to the vast majority of living beings. But we need to have compassion for them and then for the enemy. So equanimity is the foundation for the development of bodhicitta, which is this altruistic intention to become enlightened based on genuine love and compassion. So it has to come from the heart. You have to realize that they're suffering, feel connection to them, because if you don't, if you hate somebody and they're suffering, what happens? You're happy. Right? And if you're indifferent and they're suffering, well, you just don't care. You do, but you really don't. If you love somebody and they're suffering, you really want them to be free of suffering if you feel connection. So that's what we're trying to, that's what bodhicitta is based on, genuine loving compassion, this determination to become enlightened based on love and compassion. You want to be a nurse. You want to do a job where you can help EMT, doctor, you name it. You want to help people that are in these places where there's problems, no matter where it is. We have to develop ourselves first. We can't just run out there and help people if we don't have the qualities and the skills ourselves. So to lead others away from their current state of confusion and suffering to less suffering and less suffering and even joy and then freedom, nirvana, and then full enlightenment, we have to do it ourselves. We got to do the work ourselves. So there's a lot of work to be done, but this is the motivation that a bodhisattva has, is I must become enlightened in order to help others. So that's another key piece of the motivation for Tantra. Otherwise, poison. Darth Vader. Darth Vader, not Luke Skywalker, not Yoda. Yoda, I like Yoda. By the way, Yoda was supposed to be, early on, the image of Yoda is based on, he looks exactly like Alex Berzin's guru. I can't think of his name right now, but I've seen him. And the face and everything. So you have to have renunciation, bodhicitta, and then the correct view of reality. Seeing things as they are, not believing that our concrete sense of self is true and real. What we do is project a sense of self, which is real. I mean, there is a self, right? You do exist, right? Does everybody, we have a mind and a body. So we exist. But what does ignorance project? Ignorance believes that there's a truly existent mind and body. Not just a narrowly labeled mind and body, but we believe there's a truly existent I, and then we cling to that I and believe it's the most important thing in the world. And if somebody offends me, what happens? I get angry. And if I see something that's desirable, I want it. I, me, me. It's the devil. It lives right here in our heart. in our mind. It's this ignorant view of ourself in reality that we need to see through for Tantra to work. So renunciation, bodhicitta, and emptiness. Crucial for this to go anywhere. Then transform desire into wisdom. I was talking. You want to wrap it up? Thank you. All right. So, we can do more of this next time. But the so transform desire into wisdom. So one of the ways to do this is that, for example, again, you actually, I'm going to save this for another class because it's more has to do with Hatha Yoga Tantra. But actually, even in the Kriya Tantra levels, I'll say it this way. Each of the four levels of Tantra are working with progressively more powerful levels of desire energy, which causes attachment to arise, right?
Are desire and attachment different? Or the
in this case, they're very similar.
Uh-huh.
You know, because if you desire something in a deluded way, you're attached to it, right? But when you see a beautiful, let's say, you know, we're talking about, let's talk about an attractive person, somebody that you see and you find them physically and mentally, what is the word, sapiosexual, intellectually, you know, you find them really desirable. And just looking at them makes you feel good. So that kind of, that's the first level of desire that we work with in the action tantra. It's just the action of looking at the deity and feeling, for example, if you're looking at Green Tara or whatever version, Manjushri, you know, they're male deities, they're female deities, whatever works for you. But you look at that deity or that person in some kind of pleasant, desirable mind arises, okay? And that desire, slash attachment that we're talking about is not is the deluded attachment. And what it needs to be done, what we need to do is transform it into wisdom. And so we can use the energy that desire brings up. And while we're feeling good by looking at this desirable object, then meditating on emptiness. And then not only are you conjoining your understanding of emptiness with a pleasant mind, with a happy, contented mind, that's enjoying this desirable object, but now you're not seeing it in a deluded way. You're seeing it in a realistic way. So now we have both, we have the union of bliss and emptiness. Isn't that what? Wisdom, desire, and bliss. Yeah. So we're using that. So at the lowest level of Tantra, we're just using the desire energy of looking at something attractive, being, person, usually. It is person. Then at the next level would be the desire the desire or attachment that would come from like holding hands, right? So that's the performance tantra, a little bit higher. So now we're working with a little bit more powerful desire energy, right? A little bit more powerful attachment. Then there's like, I might be getting this a little wrong, but I'm not far off. Then the yoga tantra is working with the desire of maybe kissing, right? And hugging, that kind of energy. Now we got more desire energy to work with. How can we transform that desire energy to not cause us to become more deluded, but actually use that desire energy to help develop wisdom? And again, you have to understand emptiness to make this work. And you have to actually have a profound interest, a profound understanding of emptiness. And then in Hatha Yoga Tantra, or Mahayana, the highest level of Tantra, you're using the desire, attachment, energy of actual sexual relations, of sexual embrace. And you can imagine, normally, you know, our mind just loses, you know, swoons, goes crazy. We don't see that as an opportunity to develop wisdom and compassion and enlightenment. Our mind's not ready to handle that level of desire energy with, clearly. You know, we're not ready to practice at that highest level. So we practice at the lower levels to be able to practice at the highest level, to be able to transform even the energy of sexual embrace into that attachment and desire into wisdom and compassion. Now that's a tall order, isn't it? But that's what Buddhism is claiming. So it's kind of interesting. Buddhism doesn't reject any, particularly Tantra, doesn't it reject anything in life? Everything that we encounter can be transformed. That's why Lama Yeshe was saying that the West is such a perfect place for Tantra, because there's like so many things out there to cause this desire energy to arise, from bulletin boards to magazines to people that we see running around, whatever. You know, it's all over the place. So we're trying to learn how to work with different levels of desire energy, and not have it entrap us further in samsara by causing us to cling and crave and so forth. All that stuff that keeps the wheel of the 12 links in motion. But we're trying to develop wisdom and compassion. Well, that's probably too much information, but that gives you an idea how the four levels of Tantra were meant to be practiced. And then last thing I'll say, yeah.
Quick question. So the lowest level of tantric practice, so if I'm understanding correctly from what you said, you generate this desire energy or attachment energy because you imagine someone that you physically find attractive or mentally or whatever, a person. And then you use, while you are in that state, and while you're feeling that energy.
There's attachment, in that moment is usually associated with some...
Yeah.
The mind is a little bit on the happy side, right?
Exactly.
When you see somebody that's really attractive, you feel good
about that.
Wow, I like that. It feels good.
So you use that, you're in that state, and then how does
and
the emptiness...
And then you have to do a little Aikido move. And you have to transform, you let go of the attachment, and you hold on to the blissful energy...
Right.
Whatever it is, at this level is pretty low, and then you meditate on emptiness.
Okay, that's what. Okay.
And it's through meditating on emptiness that you cut through the desire.
Okay. Awesome. Great. Thank you.
But you have to lose the attachment.
Fortunately, you do. But actually, it's said that you can't. It's actually said in the teachings, you can't. What we experience now, because we're even. In sexual relations, is sort of low level compared to what we could experience if we weren't attached, clinging to the joy or the experience of that moment. So attachment's not actually even helping us when we're having fun. We think that's fun. That's just according, if we understand how the mind works, if you're clinging to pleasure, what's happening while you're clinging to the pleasurable experience? Number one, you don't want to lose it, do you? You're afraid of losing it. And as you know, it's not going to last. But we cling to it. So in clinging to it, we can't even take single-minded pleasure and enjoyment in what we're experiencing, and we're afraid of losing it. So the mind's all screwed up in that moment of having any kind of pleasurable experience.
But can you recognize that there's another level of energy so that gets you the second level, but you're going to use, there's a better level of energy that'll take you higher?
Well, let's talk about the three principles of the path. Really, because bodhicitta is where, practicing the three principles of the path, getting that down, path. Otherwise, I have a friend who's and she's talked about this. She's done so many tantric retreats, I mean highest yoga tantra retreats, and all these deities that I talked about, and she's an amazing practitioner. And she was a nun for a while, but then became a layperson. And she said she did all of these practices, and she wasn't getting the result that she wanted. Like it wasn't popping for her. And she had to go back and do meditations on death and impermanence and karma and compassion and bodhicitta and renunciation, the basic fundamental teachings of Buddhism. She had to go back and really get that down, you know, before anything would pop, anything good would happen with Tantra. And I thought she's made that very clear, that you really have to practice at the basic level. We're you know, as I said earlier on, I think it's really great if, you know, for people to come here and hear this. I mean, you know, every time I've taught this class, which has been like once every 2 years for the last however how many years discovering Buddhism has been taught since the early 2000s, it's every time it's been different, because I never know. It's very difficult to say this in a way, because it's something that at best we can aspire to practice, but it's something we should practice. I'll say this too, last point. John talked about it in his little video. He said he did that Vajrasattva retreat, and what he came out of it was with a deep experience of renunciation, a more profound experience, not just intellectual experience of renunciation, but this determination to free. But you know, but he actually had a real taste of it, and this couple. They were married at the time. They did a 4-year tantric retreat in Vermont, and they didn't talk nor touch each other for 4 years. But they cooked together and, you know, did whatever they needed to do. But they didn't communicate for these 4 years. They did tantric, these highest yoga tantric practices for 4 years. When they came out of it, you know what they said? They said what we got out of it was a more profound realization of renunciation, bodhicitta, and emptiness. So that, you know, renunciation, bodhicitta, and emptiness are really high teachings. Really high teachings. So not to be, you know, not anything, not low-level stuff. So there's a lot more that we can say about this. But did you make copies of this? All right, I wanted to pass this out so that this is something that you can use to help you throughout this course, which I think goes like 4 more weeks. It's said in Buddhism, there's absolutely no way to subdue our minds without practicing morality, right? Practicing morality, not in a puritanical perspective, but just morality in the sense of not harming ourselves, not harming others. And one of the methods of becoming better at doing that is being mindful of it. Being mindful when you're angry, being mindful when you're lustful, being mindful when you're jealous, being mindful when you're whatever the negative mind state is, it's disturbing your peace of mind. So I'm passing this out as something to look at every day before you go to bed, and try to keep track of your mind. Because one of the key features in Tantra are these vows, and they're the hardest vows in the world to keep. That's why Tantra is so, again, another reason it's so powerful and so difficult to practice at high levels, because vows are crucial. And these things that we're talking about, the 5 lay vows, that's lightweight. I mean, the tantric vows are, there's basic refuge vows, which means to practice Tantra, you have to have faith in Buddhism as your path, Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. Alright? Then you have to have the Bodhisattva vows. Alright? And when you take Bodhisattva vows, by the way, you take them for how long? forever. This lifetime and all future lifetimes. Well, that's powerful. And the tantric vows the same way. So you're taking the tantric vows for this and all future lifetimes. And they're very difficult to keep these vows. You know, vows are a crucial part of tantra. So this is just to give us, just to give you a little taste of just keeping five simple vows. Even one vow. Lama Yeshe used to say, even if you can keep one vow, that's fantastic. One, you know, like, for example, don't lie. Just keep that one. Or don't kill anything intentionally. Just keep that one. It'd be huge. But if we could keep all the vows, it'd be great. So, we're running over, sure. I know. All right. So tonight, this next week, I'm a little bit disorganized. I apologize. Next week I'll be organized. But I've been trying to figure out which of these practices I want us to do. The next week we're going to do at least one or two of these. This one has to do with a thousand arm chin raising, and has to do with bodhicitta, and particularly the eight verses of mind training. And this is a tantric text that John Landau led on the online version of this course. This is the forearm chinrezig practice. And then we're going to work toward this one, because I think this is one that we could all do. And we'll do in the last class or two. Those of you who are ready, I think particularly those of you who are doing this class for credit, you know, to complete it, you need to memorize the 100-syllable mantra. You know the Vajrasattva's mantra, which is in here? You need to memorize it. And it takes about a day if you're...
But you could also say Om Vajrasattva Hum, yes?
That's the lightweight version of it. I'm not sure what you'd purify with that. But yeah, that's a good start, but we can do that. So let's just kind of, this next week, what I'd like you to do is to keep your vow, is to try to practice this vow thing. Do that. I'd like for you to do some sort of meditation practice during the week. And it could be a mindfulness practice. You could do a concentration practice where you're just picking one object, like your breath, and not letting your mind wander. Or you can just open up to the totality of your experience and just be mindful of what's going on. You know, do some kind of formal sitting practice. I'm going to say for at least 10 minutes a day. 15 would be better. 10 minutes a day, do some kind of formal sitting practice and being mindful, and do whatever reading. If you've got the Introduction to Tantra text, I'd like you to start reading that. If you can read the first chapter of the first third of the book, it'd be a good start. And so now we're going to finish up with just about a couple of minutes of silence, and then we'll do a dedication. You know, so those of you, we put our lives on hold and came here tonight with a wholesome motivation that we could somehow benefit our mind. And whatever, anything that benefits our mind, it benefits others. Even if that's not your motivation, that's good enough. And we can aspire, at least have the aspiration to practice Tantra, to practice this really most profound method of Buddhism. It's so different than anything else that we do here at Kadampa Center. You know, we don't talk about it very much, except in Discovering Buddhism. Sometimes teachers come here, but it's really based on renunciation, this determination to be free from suffering, and we have confidence that we can be free. We believe in ourselves, and then we develop, you know, then we have bodhicitta, this altruistic based on love and compassion, wish to become enlightened in order to help others. Sounds like a great idea. It is a great idea. And in the beginning, it's an idea, but we can make it a habit by practicing it. And then the correct view of reality, emptiness, with that, even with just a basic understanding and experience of these three principles of the path, we're ready to at least hear about and begin and to dabble in the practices of Tantra, understanding that that it's very profound and rich and deep and vast in so many different ways, and we just want to learn enough so that, you know, maybe we can do some practices in this life, but at least we can aspire to practice in future lifetimes. So whatever merit that we've generated individually and collectively, we want to dedicate that, at whatever positive potential, dedicate that to our development as spiritually, and thus making us better able to help our family, our spouses, our children, our loved ones, our extended family, the people that we work with. This is the real people in our lives, the real situations in our lives, that what we do here benefits not only us, but it benefits others and eventually all living beings. We dedicate that positive potential to benefit all beings. Okay, so thank you for your attention and taking your time to be here. And I'll see you back next week, and we'll go back over some of these things, and we'll cover more stuff, we'll cover a lot of information, and we'll do more practices too.